Linda Fott. Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Fott, for North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
And Justice Kavanaugh and his family had to deal with an attempted assassin on their street because people were posting their addresses and asking people to go to their houses. Kind of remarkable that the justices get along as well as they do, given what happened there.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Molly Hemingway, author of the brand new book, Alito, The Justice Who Reshaped the Supreme Court and Restored the Constitution. We'll go in depth with Molly about that book on today's program. Also, later on, Janie Nitza. She's the co-author with Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch of a great new children's book, Heroes of 1776. First, we're joined by the great Molly Hemingway. She is a senior journalism fellow here at Hillsdale College, editor-in-chief at The Federalist, Fox News contributor, a best-selling author, too. You probably own her previous book, Rigged, and maybe Justice on Trial, and you'll probably own the new one, Alito, The Justice Who Reshaped the Supreme Court and Restored the Constitution. Molly, thanks so much for joining us.
It is so wonderful to be here with you.
You've done so much work for these books you've written, a lot of investigative work. This is different. You're writing about a sitting Supreme Court justice for which secrecy is somewhat the norm. What were the unique challenges of writing a book on someone like Justice Alito?
Well, there are already challenges in covering the Supreme Court. In some ways, the court is very transparent. It publicly announces what cases it's going to hear. It holds public oral arguments where you can hear what the justices want to know about a given case. It puts its decisions in writing and publishes them. And when people disagree, they publish those things as well. But in other ways, it is one of the most, if not the most secretive parts of Washington, D.C. It's a very small group of people who work in the Supreme Court. Each justice has four clerks per year. These are top graduates of law schools. They have about three staff members per justice, and then a few permanent staff members. It's just not a big group of people. The staff members tend to work there for a long time, and they're not talking to you. There's a limited pool of former staff members. And then among even the justices themselves, Justice Alito is the one who's very reserved. The rest you'll occasionally see in public giving big talks or appearing on Broadway or going to the Grammys. Justice Alito is extremely reserved, extremely quiet, and he does not want people talking about him. So that was certainly a challenge, but I was able to interview nearly 100 people who are close to Justice Alito, including some of his colleagues, to get a really good picture and also be able to tell that behind the scenes story of what's happening on the court.
Yes, it's kind of three books in one. It's this look at Sam Alito and who he is and how he became who he is. It's a look at the makeup and background of the current court, and then some newsiness. And we'll talk about all three of those aspects in the course of our conversation today. You mentioned early in Alito that he is the only Supreme Court member currently to have served in the armed forces. Is that a fun fact, or does that help in a way shape who Sam Alito is?
In previous courts, you had other justices who had served in the military, but for many years now, he's been the only one to have had that experience. It's important that justices understand different parts of society. You don't have to personally experience them to understand them, but sometimes it does help. And having had that background and having gone through what it was like to be drafted, to get a low draft number and to serve in the military, you know, definitely shaped Justice Alito, particularly since he's such a bookish, scholarly type to round out his personality. And he does also speak frequently in military metaphors with mm-hmm. his clerks. He understands that there are lessons from war that can be applied to current conflicts. He tends to view the current battle over what America will be look like in those martial terms. He has a painting in his chambers, or it's not a painting, it's actually a print from like a Spanish tapestry that depicts a battle scene, and he's comfortable with thinking in those terms as well.
You quote a fellow attorney that then non-Justice Alito served with, saying, "When I see Sam Alito, I see an absolute 100% belief in the Constitution that formed our country," which is great. You love to hear that. How did Justice Alito get there?
His father had a profound influence upon him. His father, who was an immigrant from Italy, he came over when he was an infant, had spent his life in public service. He served in a nonpartisan role at the New Jersey legislature. Alito learned early about how Supreme Court decisions can affect people's work. His dad had to completely redistrict New Jersey after a Supreme Court ruling that said that allocating legislative seats in the manner that the United States Senate did was not constitutional. And it was a lot of work for his dad. But it got him thinking about the Constitution at an early age. He was in debate at an early age, which also frequently dealt with constitutional issues. But that quote actually comes from someone he served with when he was U.S. attorney. He was prosecuting, because he was the U.S. attorney of New Jersey, that means that he handled a lot of mob cases, mm-hmm. even, you know, dealt with people who were trying to kill him, or a judge he later worked with on the Third Circuit, Marianne Trump, President Trump's sister. Uh-huh. And there was a case involving a terrorist, a Japanese terrorist, and he had ineffective counsel. And now Justice Alito made sure that that man had his rights protected. And to see the opposing counsel worrying about the rights of the defendant, it really impressed his colleagues a great deal.
Molly Hemingway is with us. Her brand new book is Alito, The Justice Who Reshaped the Supreme Court and Restored the Constitution. Before he was 40 years old, Sam Alito had served in the Justice Department. He had served for the White House. He had made arguments in front of the Supreme Court. For someone who you describe as not outwardly ambitious, how does he accomplish all of that? How do people recognize that skill in Sam Alito?
One of the things I've learned now that I've co-authored a book on the Supreme Court and written another book is you don't realize how much some of these people actually campaign for spots on the court. Uh-huh. Not everybody. Alito would be at quite the other extreme. And it's impressive because he wasn't striving for anything. He was a civil servant at the Department of Justice. Just because people recognized how good his work was, then he was asked to apply for a political position. He knew that the U.S. attorney work would be good. He eventually did want to be a federal judge. He thought being a federal judge would be just the bee's knees. But compared to most of these people, I mean, it was really his wife, Martha Ann, who forced him to put his name in the hat for the federal judgeship that he held for 15 years. But it's really just his brilliance that is so obvious to colleagues and people who are observing that he keeps getting promoted despite the fact that he has an inability to promote himself in any way.
There's a discussion in Alito about how he became a nominee for the Supreme Court and was passed over the first time, was not the first choice the second time, but eventually is asked to be the nominee. He accepts. And you say that even when presidents try to vet the Supreme Court candidates, and there are examples like O'Connor and Souter, they often missed something about the candidate. I'm curious, what do you think the Bush team missed about Alito? What were they surprised about once he was on the bench?
He always had fans who thought he would be a great justice, and I actually don't think he surprised anyone. But I think what they missed during that time was actually about Chief Justice John Roberts. Everybody loved John Roberts just as a person. Mm-hmm. And he'd always done a really good job of seeming like he was conservative. He worked for Ken Starr. He worked for Republicans. He was willing to be a political person for Republicans. But even at the time, there were some people who said, I know we think he's conservative, but he's technically never said he was. Mm-hmm. And even when he was confirmed, he flat out said, you know, I don't have a judicial philosophy. Maybe I should, but I don't. And people get mad at Roberts, but I think he's actually been pretty true to who he said he would be, which is someone who doesn't have a conservative judicial philosophy and who said he would try to defer to Congress. He's kind of been, you know, he's not been as bad as his critics say, but he has been less consistent than people would have hoped for.
It's Molly Hemingway with us. Her book is Alito, The Justice Who Reshaped the Supreme Court and Restored the Constitution. More next. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
The sudden death of our Congressman Doug LaMalfa shocked us all and left a huge void of conservative leadership in the North State. With the support of the LaMalfa family, local Republicans, and President Trump, Assemblyman James Gallagher has stepped up to help fill that void. A family man from a farming family, a business owner, and Republican leader. No one is more prepared, more proven, and more able to do the job. Here's James Gallagher.
California has become the epicenter of fraud and waste in government. Over $125 billion have been lost to Medicare and unemployment fraud. $100 billion for a train to nowhere. And billions more spent on homeless programs that just don't work. Every dollar lost comes straight out of our pockets, making California the highest tax state in the nation. I'm James Gallagher. I'm running for Congress, and I approve this message because you deserve better from the government you pay for.
Paid for by Gallagher for Congress.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
The Reading Rodeo is back. Buck and By the River, May 13th through the 16th. Tickets are on sale now exclusively at ReadingRodeo.com. 4 nights of heart-wrenching rodeo action, family entertainment, and unforgettable thrills with special theme nights each evening. Thanks to our amazing sponsors. Sierra Pacific Industries, Middleton Whiskey Block Beverage, SNL Group, and Reading Rancheria. Don't miss it. The Reading Rodeo, May 13th through the 16th. Visit ReadingRodeo.com.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Hey neighbors, have you ever wondered where you can find a store that truly feels like home? Well, look no further. Grange Co-op has been community-focused since 1934, and guess what? We're not just a store, we're owned by customers just like you. Yep, that's right, it's all about community here. So why choose Grange Co-op? When you shop with us, you're not just supporting a store, you're supporting a community. Grange Co-op has what you need for your home, garden, pets, and farm. Grange Co-op, where the values of yesterday meet the needs of today.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram, continuing with Molly Hemingway, her new book, Alito, The Justice Who Reshaped the Supreme Court and Restored the Constitution. Molly, as a person who asks questions of many people in the course of a week, I enjoyed the section on oral arguments and how sometimes Justice Alito's questions become turning points in those cases for other justices. Why is he so focused on oral arguments and their importance to individual cases?
When the court decides to hear a case, the individual justices might have wildly different ideas about what the nut of the issue is. When they get back into their conference, they're going to argue for their particular approach to a case or the way they think a case should be decided. Justice Alito, who's widely considered, along with Elena Kagan, as the best at oral argument on the court, he has this knack for peeling away all the distractions that are there in a case and getting to what he believes is the heart of the issue, and it's very persuasive for people. He has managed to move the court through oral argument, even if he's not writing the eventual, you know, opinion or decision, he can still influence the way people view it. And there are some pretty, I think, funny stories about that in the book, mm-hmm. like when there was a Minnesota law that forbade people from wearing political gear to vote. They had pulled aside someone who had a Tea Party shirt and a pin calling for voter ID, and they said he was violating the law. And Justice Alito, in oral argument, starts asking a series of hypotheticals, like, could you wear a rainbow flag shirt? Well, yeah, that's fine. That's not political. Could you wear a shirt commemorating the park, or, you know, noting the Parkland community that had faced a gun massacre? Yes, mm-hmm. that's fine. Okay, can you wear an NRA shirt? No, you cannot wear a National Rifle Association shirt. He says, well, could you wear a shirt with the words of the Second Amendment? No, that would be too political. And then he just, like, lets it hang, and he says, what about a shirt with the words of the First Amendment? And everybody just busts out laughing. And that ends up being a centerpiece of Chief Justice John Roberts' majority opinion that this was an infringement upon people's First Amendment rights. And he kind of clarified it for everybody, mm-hmm. not of the issue.
Molly Hemingway with us, your book, Alito, The Justice Who Reshaped the Supreme Court and Restored the Constitution. There are frequent stories inside Alito about him being someone who helps where he can assist, where he can lend a hand, where he can be a help to someone around him. He generally does so. And there's stories about him hiring other judges, secretaries who need maybe a year or two for like full retirement benefits. So he's often doing small things like that for people around him. There's a story about how he'd be making his own copies in the hallway, which meant the security guard had to rise and sit each time he walked by. And they said, hey, could you maybe have someone else do that so the security guard can just sit down and not have to stand up? But point being, humility and integrity are important for Supreme Court nominees. Alito had that in spades. Why does a Supreme Court nominee need those two attributes?
Well, another justice who has that along with Alito is Thomas, who's also very much not wanting to put other people out and doesn't love the trappings of power. I think for the Supreme Court in particular, it is a powerful position, and a lot of people who have become justices get high on that power, and they think that the way they think is so wonderful that they should be able to legislate from the bench. When you're humble about the role of a justice, you're humble about the application of the law, you're looking to be more reserved. And for Justice Alito, he's slightly different than all of his originalist colleagues. He does identify as an originalist, mm-hmm. but he has said that he says he's a practical originalist. And from the very beginning, he had a view that the court should be more restrained and less activist.
I want to ask about that phrase, practical originalism, because there are now, thankfully, a number of justices on the Supreme Court who say they are originalists. And you, inside Alito, try to, again, delineate between what makes Justice Alito's, maybe we'll call it a strain of originalism, slightly different than, say, Justice Thomas's or Justice Barrett's. What do you mean when you say practical originalism?
Well, Justice Thomas, people love him, and for good reason. He's one of our country's greatest greatest people. And he's more philosophical in his approach. He's very much like Justice Scalia was. These are men who say, well, this is what it should be. I'm going to plant my flag here, and I don't really care if anyone's with me because I care about being right. It is a form of leadership on the court, what Clarence Thomas provides. You see this most, you see this especially with how he viewed when he got on the court. Mm-hmm. Gun rights as an individual right, and he was frequently out there on his own, and eventually the court agreed with him. Well, Alito may agree with Thomas, they almost always do, but he's thinking more about, well, if that's where we should be, how are we going to get there? And you don't always just get there by planting your flag. Sometimes you also have to do work and using incremental decisions getting there. The way it was put in the book by someone was that Justice Thomas is the deployed aircraft carrier, and Justice Alito, his chambers are the Green Berets. And you, if you want to have success on the court, it's good to have both.
I want to ask a little more about that, because I talked with James Rosen recently for his second part of his three-part biography on former Supreme Court late Justice Antonin Scalia. And something in the second part that really came through was Scalia was not known for bringing people to his side necessarily. He wasn't known for sort of crafting these majorities. He wasn't known for sort of cajoling others on the court to his point of view. And it does seem like in Alito, you describe a justice who is more concerned about that, or at least has the skill to build some bridges and to make those connections happen without softening his own perspective or his own point of view. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's what I learned from his colleagues and people who are close court watchers. When Scalia was appointed, this was after you had a Brennan on the court who was also a very good writer, and he was very persuasive with his colleagues, and he was very influential on the court. People thought because Scalia was so brilliant with the written word and so fun, and you know, just people just loved being around him. He famously had a very good friendship with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Mm-hmm. They were kind of hoping he would be like the Brennan of the right, but because of what you just noted, he actually didn't really care if anyone was with him. What did one of the colleagues say? It was like someone who said, you know, he'd rather be right than be president.
Uh-huh.
For which famous person that was. That's how Scalia was. And I think, you know, Thomas, he said it publicly before. He cares about his own opinions more than the opinions of others. Whereas Alito's thinking, well, he might feel that way too, but you still want to have wins.
Mm-hmm.
And right now in the conservative movement, we have these people who say the only thing that matters is principle. And these other people who want to actually achieve victory, they're wrong. And then on the other hand, you have these people who say, all I care about is winning at any cost, and I'm sick of these people who care about principle. Well, I think Alito provides a very good model for how both sides are erring. In fact, being principled and being pragmatic and prudential, these are not in conflict with each other, and they go well together. This is what effective movements do, whether it's a legal movement or a political movement, to blend being firmly rooted on principle in your judicial philosophy, while also thinking, how does this help the situation?
We'll pause there and pick back up with more on the Dobbs case in just a moment. Molly Hemingway with us, her book Alito, The Justice Who Reshaped the Supreme Court and Restored the Constitution. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Look at your home from the street for a second. Now imagine it with rich, fresh color, clean trim, and a finish that looks great in the sunshine. Eagle Eye Painting can make that happen quickly and professionally. Our friendly crew focuses on the details through prep, careful edges, and a job site that's cleaned up when we're done. We're local, licensed, bonded, and insured, and we can walk you through the whole process in English or Spanish. Make this the season your home really stands out. Call Eagle Eye Painting at 530-410-1317 for your free exterior estimate. That's 530-410-1317 or visit 530painter.com.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Have your information and understand what you're looking for? We we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Diamond Crown Classic. Created over a century ago, and to this day, it remains one of J.C. Newman's finest examples of what a cigar should be. Dominican binder, creamy Connecticut wrapper, and a selection of five different fillers from the Caribbean to Central America. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
This Mother's Day, don't just give mom a car. Give her a feast she'll never forget. Join us Sunday, May 10th in the Wind River Event Center for our lavish Mother's Day brunch. Chef-carved prime rib, fresh succulent crab, omelet and French toast station with an assortment of savory sides and desserts. Strictly for spoiling all the moms in our lives. With three separate seatings at 9 a.m., 11:30 a.m., and 2 p.m. Tickets are just $60 plus fee. Visit WindRiver.com for more details. Find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
At Plumas Bank, we understand business because we've grown alongside you in the communities we call home. We're proud to grow in Redding and excited to welcome Anderson and Red Bluff to the Plumas Bank family. With our new locations, your business gains expanded lending powers, more convenient locations, and more than 40 years of trusted community banking experience. Plumas Bank, building stronger communities. Learn more at plumasbank.com.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Molly Hemingway is with us. Her new book, Alito, The Justice Who Reshaped the Supreme Court and Restored the Constitution. Molly, we were talking about Alito's ability to attract a majority to his position. Let's use that to pivot toward the Dobbs decision. Alito writes the Dobbs decision, the majority decision. In that case, is that one of the main reasons why Alito was the right justice to pen that ruling?
Yes. So when the Dobbs decision was coming down the pike, it was, first of all, interesting. People knew that Roe v. Wade had to be overturned. They'd known this for decades. Even at the time it was passed, it was roundly derided as being nowhere near constitutional law, just being a joke of a decision in many ways. But when it came time to overturn it, people would always lack the courage. They would be dealing with so much political pressure, they couldn't take it. And so when Dobbs finally gets a hearing before the court, it's pretty, you know, clear. You can hear it in the oral argument. There are five votes to overturn Roe v. Wade. And in fact, that's what there were. And the person who assigns the opinion is the senior most justice in the majority. So that was Clarence Thomas. And he knew it was delicate. He knew every time that they'd tried to do this before, it had fallen apart. He needed someone. He couldn't do it himself because he was already working on a big gun rights case, which is a big issue for Justice Thomas. And he needed someone who would do the work that needed to be done for this to be viewed as a legitimate ruling that would keep the majority together and that would be able to withstand the unbelievable pressure coming from the media and the left and other groups. And so it was a kind of a no-brainer. It had to be Alito.
during the Dobbs deliberations and in the writing of that decision, I guess after the writing of the decision, it is leaked, of course, a big leak to Politico, and people now know that the majority opinion will be to overturn Roe v. Wade. This puts Supreme Court justices in danger because an opinion does not happen until that opinion is actually released, and they're waiting on the dissent. And the liberals on the court are slow playing the dissent, and the conservatives or the majority says, okay, at least give us a date, and they won't do that. And you have a story early in Alito that's making some news about a shouting match. I was going to say between, but I'm not sure it's between. A shouter on the Supreme Court, shouting at a different Supreme Court justice, Elena Kagan and Stephen Breyer. What did you learn about that incident?
Well, this to me was the most explosive thing I learned about what was happening behind the scenes on the court. Yeah, after the Dobbs decision is leaked, the threats on the justices' lives are immediate, and it's a very bad situation. Amy Coney Barrett has to wear a bulletproof vest, put it on in front of her children. People are being moved to secure locations. Everybody's security protocol is having to be improved right away. When they meet in conference, which means just the nine justices themselves, after that leak, they learn that the people writing the dissent, who've had really 50 years to write the dissent, but at the very least since December 1st, and also it's from February when the majority opinion was disseminated, they claim they're nowhere near being done with their dissent. And so they're asked, could you speed it up? Could you give us a date by which time it'll be done? And they demur, and then yes, Elena Kagan goes to Justice Breyer's chambers. Justice Breyer, strong progressive on the court, who was retiring, but viewed with love and admiration by his colleagues. He was always very cordial, very kind to his colleagues. And he seemed to be the one most willing to accommodate them out of concern for their lives. Mm-hmm. And Elena Kagan goes to his chambers and screams at him not to accommodate them. And she won because they didn't get their opinion done until June, or their dissent done until June. And then they included in it a completely gratuitous and unnecessary footnote to a case that really was still being worked on and wouldn't come out for 3 to 4 weeks. They didn't need to include that footnote, but they did. Mm-hmm. And that then delayed it another 3.5 weeks. While the justices had their lives threatened every day, and Justice Kavanaugh and his family had to deal with an attempted assassin on their street because people were posting their addresses and asking people to go to their houses. I mean, it was a horrific situation. It's kind of remarkable that the justices get along as well as they do, given what happened there.
Well, let me ask about that. Elena Kagan, there's a section later on in Alito where you say that some of her clerks, along with others, describe her as emotionally abusive, demanding, demoralizing, demeaning. Her clerks had fear in their eyes, recalled someone who clerked for a different justice. Kagan, for the most part, is thought about as the reasonable one, or at least the smart one among the liberal justices on the court by many conservatives. But do people like her? Is she liked?
So these things are both true. She is far and away the intellectual leader of the left wing of the court. And if the court were a different composition, she would probably be the intellectual leader of the court, period. She is smart. She does her work. And so the justices do respect her and take her arguments very seriously. She's also the liberal justice most likely to work with the conservative majority on, and she tries to be persuasive to get them to see things her way. If she's able to join an opinion to soften it, she'll do that. So she's very strategic. I will say there's another thing in there about her, that she learned how to golf so she could cozy up with some of the justices. She learned how to hunt so she could go on trips with Justice Scalia. And sometimes that can be viewed as trying a bit too hard and being a bit too obvious about about the political nature of how she views it. She is the best politician on the court. She's the only one who was not a federal judge prior to being on the court. She actually had a political background. So she's a complicated figure, but she still is far and away the most respected of the liberals by the conservatives.
Speaking of other justices, Molly Hemingway, you have a little note in Chapter 6 that John Roberts and Brett Kavanaugh only consider the top students from top law schools to be clerks, don't consider political persuasion. Some don't even make the pretense of being conservative. Alito, on the other hand, tries to find good conservative minds and work with them and shape them as they are clerks. What's the rationale or argument? Why would Roberts and Kavanaugh not necessarily care about the persuasions or even the legal thinking of the clerks they hire?
Doing a book like this, you talk to a lot of clerks from a lot of different justices, and they're all impressive people. In the case of Chief Justice Roberts in particular, but I think you see this with Kavanaugh as well, they're very conscious of how their peers in Washington, D.C. view them. And the way that they choose clerks, the very top grads of the top law schools, who will frequently go on to become powerful people in law firms, that kind of works with the D.C. mindset. With Justice Thomas and Justice Alito, that is not how they're going about picking clerks because they care about different things. They actually, not only do they not care what people in Washington, D.C. think about them, they think the higher they're viewed in Washington, D.C., the worse job they're doing. So they want to pick people who share their concern for the country. They are also the very top elite grads of top law schools, but they're screening, and in Alito's case in particular, actually, I think both of them do this. They screen for public service. They want people who are going to become solicitors general or working at a nonprofit law firm or working in some fashion to help the country, which they view as needing a lot of help right now. When you become a clerk, you leave and immediately make not just more than the Supreme Court justice, you make many times more than the Supreme Court justice. It's an incredible privilege and gift to get this. You also, since you were mentioning James Rosen's book on Scalia, he used to hire a clerk. He used to intentionally hire a clerk that was from a different ideology to sharpen his chambers. Mm-hmm. But even he stopped doing that after a while because he realized I'm just credentialing people for really no good reason.
Molly Hemingway, senior journalism fellow here at Hillsdale College, editor-in-chief at The Federalist and a Fox News contributor. The new book, It's Wonderful, Alito, the Justice Who Reshaped the Supreme Court and Restored the Constitution. Molly Hemingway, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Scott.
Up next, Janie Nitza joins us. She's co-author with Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch of the brand new children's book, Heroes of 1776. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Shasta Lake and neighboring friends, the Queen of Dragons has your back with premium products at prices that work for you. As the longest standing dispensary in the area, our local team knows exactly what you need. Our shelves are stocked with the freshest flower in town. From our premium, fresh, and local line to our budget-friendly options featuring Emerald Junkies and Tricana Boys. Don't miss our famous Flower Friday deals. Top quality at unbeatable prices. And for the green thumbs out there, clones are now in store for the growing season. Join our Dragons Reward program and earn points with every purchase. Stop by 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake or call us for delivery at 530-276-9771 or check out our menu at thequeenofdragons.com. The Queen of Dragons, premium offerings, unbeatable value just for you.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Every drive tells a story. Morning commutes, weekend getaways, road trips that stretch for miles. That's why you need Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market Street and Eureka Way in downtown Reading. At Quick and Clean Car Wash, you'll receive a detailed hand scrub pre-clean, a gentle soft cloth wash, and a personal towel dry brings out a smooth, polished shine. Fast, affordable, starting at only $12. Quick and clean car wash at the corner of Market Street and Eureka Way in downtown Reading.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is financial advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Turtle Bay's glowing wild and illuminated Wildlife Lantern Festival is back and better than ever for 2026 at the Sundial Bridge in Redding, California.
Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with larger-than-life displays of plants and animals from around the world,
including dinosaurs and icons from ancient Egypt.
Jump on the new Turtle Express for a fun ride through the show.
Glowing Wild is May 1st through June 28th, 7 to 10 p.m. Buy tickets online for the best price at turtlebay.org.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out more great Hillsdale College audio via the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, podcast.hillsdale.edu for older episodes of this program, plus The Larry Arnn Show, the Hillsdale College Online Courses Podcast, Imprimis, and more at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. We're joined by Janie Nitze. She's co-author of a brand new book along with Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch called Heroes of 1776, The Story of the Declaration of Independence. Janie has a little experience with the justice, writing two other New York Times bestsellers with him in the past. Janie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Great timing. I know you planned it this way. Coincides with the 250th anniversary, of course. It's nice when things work out that way. Book is called Heroes of 1776. So I should point out Heroes of 1776 is a children's book, but that doesn't mean it's not great for adults. I've read enough children's books in my time to know that there are some that are also great for adults. This is one of them. Heroes of 1776. So a lot of people know the Declaration, but they don't know the people behind it or around it. Why is it important, and why in Heroes of 1776 do we meet and hear about the human stories instead of just those historical events?
Yeah, I mean, you're actually touching here on one of the reasons why we wanted to write a children's book focusing on the human stories, which is that there are many books out there, that great books, that focus on the events that led to the Declaration, so the Stamp Act, you know, Blockade of Boston, Tea Party, and so forth. Those sort of series of events did not inevitably lead to the Declaration, right? The pages of the history books are full of people who were oppressed, maybe have risen against a tyrannical ruler, and didn't end up with anything like our Declaration of Independence. And even as late as June of 1776, wasn't obvious that the colonists would declare independence against Britain. The colonies at the Second Continental Congress, at the first vote, they were split. Not only nine colonies voted for independence. Two voted against it, one Delaware. Delegates were tied, and New York hadn't received instructions, didn't vote at all. And it took men like Caesar Rodney. We tell his story. He was a delegate from Delaware, away on military business. He rode 80 miles through the night. Cancer was eating away at his face. There was a thunderstorm raging outside to break the vote in his delegation in favor of independence. It took men like Edward Rutledge. He was in the South Carolina delegation. He did not favor independence at that time, at least, but he put aside his own personal views in favor of having the colonies vote unanimously. And then even once independence was declared, it wasn't obvious we would have a declaration that had those three great ideals, you know, equality, rights, including the right to self-rule. And then the revolution itself, we would have never won. In fact, the odds were greatly stacked against us, of course, without men, women, and children from across the colonies, you know, kids as young as 10, earlier, joining the Continental Army. Benjamin Franklin said on exiting the Continental Congress when asked, you know, what do you guys form in there? And he said, Republic, if you can keep it. So none of this can endure either without men, women, and children today, you know, knowing the rights, ensuring that they're preserved for future generations.
Janie Nitze is with us. She's co-author with Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch of the new book, Heroes of 1776, The Story of the Declaration of Independence. Many of those individuals that you mentioned took enormous personal risks. Family,
livelihood, even their lives. How can children today, our young people today, how can they find a way to fully appreciate that level of sacrifice?
I think it's very hard for people born into freedom to appreciate just how glorious a thing it is and how fragile it is. And here, you know, one of my favorite quotes, D.H. Lawrence, men fight for liberty and win it with hard knocks. Their children brought up easy, let it slip away. And, you know, my own parents fled from communism. And so this was something I heard. They came to this country in search of freedom, and something I heard when I was growing up. Sort of, you know, them thinking I took for granted, as I probably did, you know, freedom of speech and of religion. You know, officers weren't going to burst into my home at any moment, right? That's all things that they, you know, experienced back in their own country. And I think how I started to learn gratitude or go on the journey of it, it's an imperfect journey, is really, you know, from, again, stories, learning their stories of what it was like growing up in, you know, under a system like communism. And so I think our hope here in this book is really for kids to start learning a little bit about, you know, U.S. history, some about civics, and really about virtues, and hopefully seeing what, you know, children, some probably younger than themselves, did at that time, the sacrifices they went through at that time. You know, again, the fighter who joins the army at age 10. I think that really to understand our freedoms is important to understand our history and to understand what people sacrifice in order to gain those freedoms for us.
There's the story inside Heroes of 1776 of Mary Catherine Goddard. After the declaration is signed, they had to print it, and Mary Catherine Goddard was in charge of that. Tell us why you included her story in this book.
Her story is one of my favorites. So she is born in Connecticut. She follows her family to Baltimore. Her brother starts the first Baltimore newspaper on the cusp of the Revolution. He eventually leaves to go travel around the countries and try to form the Continental Press as an alternative to the Royal Post, apologies, as an alternative to the Royal Post. And she takes over the newspaper, and she turns into a voice of patriot resistance. And when the Second Continental Congress landed in Baltimore in January of 1776, after the British took over Philadelphia, they decided at that moment to print a version of the Declaration with all their names on it, which they had not done thus far, knowing full well that the British would target them. They'd only published a version of the Declaration with two names on it, John Hancock and the Secretary. And they turned to Mary Catherine Goddard. And what I love about her story is, in the past, when she had printed her newspaper, she signed her name M.K. Goddard. Mm-hmm. And while we can't exactly know why, we could surmise perhaps that she was trying to shield her identity, maybe even shield the fact that she was a woman. But on the Declaration, for the first time that we know of, she signed her name printed by Mary Catherine Goddard, her full name, identifying herself alongside the signers as a traitor to the British and really exposing herself to vengeance just like the signers. And it was one of these stories that we included that, I, to be honest, I didn't know of before researching the Declaration for this book. I didn't know that a woman's name appears in the Declaration of Independence. So that's just sort of one of my favorite stories from the book.
Talking with Janie Nitza, she is co-author with Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch of Heroes of 1776, a wonderful new children's book. What was it like working with Justice Gorsuch? What did he bring to the project creatively?
Oh, he is just a wonderful, wonderful person to work with. Of course, as you mentioned, have worked with him for three books at the moment. And I think what I particularly appreciate, both having clerked for him twice now and then worked for him on several books, is he's someone who understands that the human stories matter. Certainly they don't affect how he rules in a particular case. And so on our last book, Overruled, where we talked about the change in the law in the last few decades, rise of the bureaucracy, we really wrote about the bureaucracy through human stories. And we wanted to do similarly in telling the story of the Declaration. And he's someone, you know, speaking of virtues, we talk a lot about virtues in this book, and he's someone that just has been such a, you know, wonderful mentor for myself and other clerks, because he really embodies so many of the virtues that I think perhaps now maybe is, you know, lost among some other lost among society, maybe let's put it that way. And so it was really just wonderful working with him.
Janie, you're a mom of three and written this wonderful children's book. How would you encourage parents to use Heroes of 1776 to maybe begin or continue talk about the founding, especially as we hear a lot about America 250 and the meaning of America today?
Well, this is a topic I feel very strongly about, having three young kids. I think civic education in this country is, is in a state of a crisis, as recognized on a bipartisan basis at this point. And I could throw some statistics out here, but just for example, 18% of liberal arts colleges require a U.S. history course. So over 80% do not require a U.S. history course, any sort of course, to graduate college. Graduating eighth graders, only 13% are proficient in U.S. history, 22% proficient in civics. And so I no longer think that we as parents can rely on our schools necessarily to teach important subjects like U.S. history, civics, civility, virtues. And I got good advice, when I became a parent, said, beyond the essentials of sort of shelter and food and love, the most important thing you can do to your kids or for your kids really is to read to them and to provide them good books.
Janie Nitza is co-author, along with Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch, of the new children's book, Heroes of 1776, The Story of the Declaration of Independence. Janie, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Molly Hemingway, her new book, Alito, and Janie Nitza and Heroes of 1776. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, I'm Dr. Maria Salas, owner of HealthWise Chiropractic. My focus is to help people feel better, look better, and take control of their health with a simple, life-changing plan. It starts with smarter eating choices and adding the right amount of protein to support gut health and reduce inflammation. You'll also receive weekly accountability coaching, a free guide, and a complimentary consultation with me, Dr. Maria Salas. Ready to feel your best? Call or text 530-227-3984.
Sample great food and beverages from local restaurants, wineries, and breweries while listening to The Billy, Panda Express, Star Thistle, Preston Jacobs, and Cash featuring Ashley Black and Kane McGee. Enjoy fun with the whole family with Reading Balloons and face painting by Squishy Doodle. Come down to the 19th annual Taste of Reading, Sunday, June 14th at the Sculpture Park at Reading City Hall. Find the complete list of events and purchase your tickets by visiting us online at tasteofreading.org.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.